I'm Dr. Felicia Mevin, and this is Health Services Unplugged. Have you ever heard the saying, knowledge is power? Sir Francis Bacon, a 17th century English author, scientist, and philosopher, gets credit for the idea in one of his writings from the early 1600s. Yes, 1600s. If knowledge is power, the ability to turn data into usable knowledge is a superpower, right? With that logic, this pod features a woman with superpowers, Dr. Bridget Catlin. Dr. Catlin is a senior scientist at the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute in the School of Medicine and Public Health. From there, she directs Mobilizing Action Toward Community Health, or MATCH, and is a co-director of the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps Program. Listen in as Dr. Catlin gives an overview of the County Rankings and Roadmaps resource and a rendition of its origin story. She also shares advice for students and early career folks about non-research training.
Hi, Bridget. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Awesome. So give me an overview of the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps, the sort of, you know, two-minute version.
The County Health Rankings provide data and rank the health of nearly every county in the U.S. And the reason that we do this is to stimulate communities to take action, to actually do something. So everything we report on is actionable. And the roadmaps portion of the project involves providing tools and guidance to communities to help them move from data to action.
Tell us a little bit about the data that actually goes into the reports, especially the data related to healthcare.
In the health rankings, we rank the health outcomes of each community, how healthy they are currently, and we use data there that comes from vital statistics, so death records and birth records, and then also data from the behavioral risk factor surveillance system. But probably the more important part of the rankings are all the health factors that we include, and we include health behaviors, we include clinical care, we include social and economic factors, and we also include some characteristics of the physical environment as well. And the data comes from a number of different sources, most of them federal, but not necessarily, not all so, but nearly all of them are. In the clinical care area, we have measures of access to healthcare, mm-hmm. and also the quality of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Under access, we look at how many people are insured, and we look at availability of providers. Specifically, we look at availability of primary care physicians, dentists, and then mental health providers.
So to me, I'm sorry to interrupt, to me, that's sort of like a superpower, because I know that the wide variety of data that could be put into a report, and yet you guys narrowed it down within this particular area to four or five indicators. So how did you do that?
Actually, it turns out that although there's tons of data out there, there isn't always data available at the county level. And so county is, you can, and also we do this in every single state. So we're looking for measures that are available everywhere. Mm-hmm. A lot of healthcare data is not necessarily available in every state. So that does limit us. So okay. We weren't choosing from a huge pool of indicators here.
Okay.
But the other part of it that I didn't talk about was the quality of care mm-hmm. measures. And there we use measures that the Dartmouth Institute puts together for us. Mm-hmm. And they do those based on Medicare fee-for-service data. Again, that's the only source of data that's available for all 50 states and where we can calculate things at the county level. So we end up looking at preventable hospital stays and then the care of diabetics, and then we look at mammograms under for older women, because that's what's available via the Medicare data set.
And why was it important to look at the county level?
Well, we are the county health rankings. So there's another organization, the United Health Foundation, that ranks the health of states. They've been doing that for 25 years. And colleagues of mine, Dave Kindig and Pat Remington, back in the early 2000s, knew about this work ranking the health of states, and they're like, well, just like politics, a local health is pretty local too. Well, let's see if we can do the county level. So they set about to do this in Wisconsin, where I'm based. Mm-hmm. And it took off in the first few years. It was very well received. Well, actually, the very first year, everybody was a little upset because people don't like rankings.
Right. Yeah.
But then they realized, oh, this was quite useful, and they were happy to have data at the county level. There's a lot of data that's published that's state level, mm-hmm. but in your local community, that's not necessarily that helpful to you. And county turns out to be the next lowest level that you can actually get data for. You can discuss the pros and cons of counties. Counties right. don't really exist in some places, but people get the sense of, you know, that this is more localized data. And even if they don't have county government, there are still communities that fall within counties. And we get feedback, like places in Massachusetts, they don't, most services mm-hmm. are not done at the county level, but right. yet there are a lot of places there still using our data to understand what's going on in their community. Because this isn't all about what government can do. It's about what all kinds of people can do to improve local health.
So give us an example of that. Like, who do you think is the typical user of these data, and how do they use it, do you think?
The main users started with local public health officials, but as hospitals are becoming more and more interested in the health of the communities that they serve, part of them partly because their own altruistic nature and partly because of their community benefit requirements as mm-hmm. well, they are increasingly using our data as one contribution to their required community health needs assessments. Other kinds of entities using it are philanthropies. Foundations find the data very helpful mm-hmm. as they begin to look and see where the neediest areas are in their service areas. So mm-hmm. they use our data. Local United Ways. United Way has a mission to improve income, education, and health, and so they use our data. We are finding that even chambers of commerce in some places, particularly those that have more favorable data, they're very happy to use it to, you know, come move to our county. We're the healthiest in Georgia or whatever, wherever it might be. But then others that aren't as healthy are really using it to dig down and figure out, okay, what is it about our place that makes us not as healthy as the next door county? You know, what and where are the areas where we can improve? So we're finding use from all of those kind of community leaders. And then we have a completely different audience of researchers, because County Health Rankings provides data on the 3,000 plus counties in the nation. We make all of our data completely accessible. You can download it in Excel or in SAS, and mm-hmm. we have code books, and we are increasingly seeing researchers as an important audience, too.
I mean, if you have a great online tool, so for people who are not familiar, you can go to the County Health Rankings site, and you have a great interface, and it says put in your zip code, and then it out pops the statistics that compares the rankings of your county versus other counties in the state. And then there's at least one page where you also have, here's the range, here's the top end for this indicator, and then here's your county. So it's a very, once all the data are in the database, it's very easy to understand and very, very accessible.
Yep. Well, thank you for that.
Like
I will clarify one thing, though. You actually have to enter your county, not your zip code.
Oh, your county, right.
Because zip codes actually cross county lines. And
yeah,
so
that's right.
Places that claim that you can get to your county via your zip code, they're going to the county where most people in that zip code live. It won't necessarily be your county. So.
Right. But the bottom line, though, is it's a wonderful sort of graphical tool that's very easy to understand, even if you're not a researcher, which is really great. So, to me, that's a superpower. So how did you become involved with this project?
About 10 years ago, I made a career shift. I had been a traditional health services researcher for many years, spending a lot of time studying consumer choice issues, and I dabbled a little in some long-term care quality work as well. But I was just ready for a change, and I had sort of a semi-midlife crisis, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I wanted to do something that was more applied. I believe in scholarly work. It's very, very important, but I just felt the need to do something that was really going to reach people more. And so I read all these self-help books and was trying to figure out, you know, how to make money while doing good, things like that. And then meanwhile, I was looking at the university job postings, and I saw this position advertised for a project to be the project director for something called Making Wisconsin the Healthiest State. And it was being run out of the Population Health Institute. I had been part of a different research center on campus. So I applied for this position, and I walked into the interview, and there was David Kindig, who it turned out had been on my dissertation committee 20 years ago. Uh-huh. And he was surprised to see me, and I was surprised to see him. But then I heard about the work that they were doing. So the Making Wisconsin the Healthiest State project came about because the University of Wisconsin Medical School had recently become the recipient of funds from the Blue Cross conversion that had taken place in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and had, you know, millions of dollars to spend. And the goal for this fund, the Wisconsin Partnership Program, was to make Wisconsin the healthiest state. And so Dave Kindig and Pat Remington had approached the dean of the school and said, well, how are we going to know if we're the healthiest state? And so they got some funds for a research project to both measure Wisconsin's health and then figure out how to improve it. So I joined that team, and we began that work. But at the same time, they'd already been doing these Wisconsin county health rankings. Mm-hmm. And so I got involved, and we started to get requests from others across the nation as to how we were doing this, mm-hmm. how to go about it. And so we ran a workshop at the Network for Public Health Institutes in May of 2007. You know, we thought we were big shots and we could give some guidance to other people. So, and we had some suggestions to give, but in the audience for that workshop was some people from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and they became very interested in the county health rankings, and particularly our model in terms of the fact that there are multiple factors that influence health, that it's not just healthcare, that there are these other, lots of other considerations. They really like that framework. They like the idea of ranking. They know that rankings get attention. Mm-hmm. And so they asked us to submit a proposal to take the Wisconsin County Health Rankings to the national level. As the story goes, we thought, okay, well, maybe we could take on 5 states a year for 3 years, and by the end of it, we would have, you know, in 3 years, we'd have, you know, there'd be 16 states with their own rankings. Mm-hmm. But the foundation came back to us and said, no, we want you to do all 50 states with it at the end of the first year. So after we picked ourselves up on the off the floor, we set about, and basically we had to change strategies. In Wisconsin, we had gone agency by agency to collect data, and mm-hmm. we had like 30 different sources just for the state of Wisconsin. Well, you multiply that by 50 and you realize you've got an unmanageable, unachievable approach. So then we had to sort of switch to using national sources of data rather than state specific. So that allowed us to do something in a uniform manner for every state. But we are the first to say that for communities in states that have their own data, the local data is going to be better than ours. Ours is a starting point, but not mm-hmm. the end point.
Right. That's great. So let's switch gears just a little bit. What do you think is the most challenging aspect of working on this project in terms of your role? But what's your role specifically, and what's the most challenging aspect of that?
Okay. So I am co-director of the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps. My colleague and co-director, Julie Willems-Van Dyke, primarily works on the roadmap side, which is the, you know, the action side, and I primarily work on the data side, but we've become increasingly interchangeable mm-hmm. over the years. I definitely oversee all of the data acquisition and analysis, but I also have a lot of other tasks related to our communication work. That was something that was really eye-opening to me moving into this line of work, was the importance of communications. When we do our national release, there are a team of communication staff, some at the foundation themselves, some with sort of outside firms, and coordinating all of that work and helping them stay true to the science, but while getting the messages across, takes up it's a very important part of what we do. And it's been the most challenging, but it's also been the most rewarding, because translating data into things that people can really understand is just so important.
Mm-hmm. So what piece of advice do you have for students who are thinking about doing the, you know, research that would inform a project like this?
Well, one thing I didn't also touch about on the challenge of this is the administration needs of all of this. Mm-hmm. Those students who are being trained as researchers get excellent guidance in that area, but they don't necessarily learn how to run a project, how to run a project in a particular setting, say for example like a state university with lots of rules, how to hire the right people to do the job, because some of the people that you hire aren't going to be researchers like you. You need to, you know, managerial skills become as important as the research itself. So keeping that in mind, it's you can't just do research in isolation. You will do it in some kind of setting, unless you are, I don't know, truly brilliant and can hole up in your office totally by yourself. You are going to end up working with a lot of other people and need to be able to, you know, need the skills to be able to do that.
That's right. And actually, increasingly, it seems like you need, no matter how brilliant you are, because of the, we're talking about health and public health and healthcare systems, it's almost impossible to do that work by yourself.
Right, yeah.
So what's your favorite book?
I was hoping you were not going to ask me this particular question.
Okay, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite what?
Movie.
I'm not going to... I read and watch movies purely for entertainment.
Yes.
And for relaxation. And often what happens is that after I've read something or seen a movie, I don't remember the name. I've just, it was good at the time, and then I move on to something else. I try to retain sort of more critical things within my head, so I'm sorry. But
no,
in my free time, I actually really would rather be kayaking than watching a movie. So
nice. Well, is it, where do you do your kayaking?
Well, it turns out that in Wisconsin, there are many, many lakes and rivers and really cool places for kayaking. I have kept count of kayaking. I bought a new kayak 3 years ago, and I have kept count of, I've been 46 times, and only 10 of those are repeats. The rest of them all brand new places, and they're all within 2 hours of Madison, Wisconsin. So it's great sport. Unfortunately, you can't do it year round here, but...
That's when you go to the movies, right? When you can't go kayaking.
Or, well, we release the county health rankings in March, so we work very, very hard in the winter months. So, but no, it's that's one of the other challenges for you talked before about for students, is learning how to manage your time and having a good quality of life as well as working hard. And that is always a struggle, but it's something I believe is very important for myself and for everybody who works on our team. So
that's great. Can I work for you?
Sure. We're always looking for bright, enthusiastic people.
Awesome. Thank you. That was really great.
Sure. You're welcome. Thanks.
Kayaking. Okay. If we ever meet, we're going to have to go do that.
Okay. All right.
All right. Take care.
Okay. You too.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to Dr. Bridget Catlin, a senior scientist at University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, and thanks to you for listening in. You can join in with your comments and other feedback and find links to more about what we talked about, including Dr. Catlin's webpage and the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps website at healthservicesunplugged.info. Health Services Unplugged is presented by Academy Health with support from Kaiser Permanente and produced by me, Dr. Felicia Mebben, and executive producer, Dr. Imani Cheers, with music by Dr. Cheryl Mebben. You can learn more about this project and the rest of Academy Health at academyhealth.org.